Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and thank you for listening to the Eastern Airlines radio show, where we come to you each week on Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our hosts are Steve Thompson, Chuck Albright, George Jen, Cecile Intriago, John Rush, Neil Holland, Sharon Manier, and me, Jim Hart. Tonight you're invited, Sharon Manier, who is the author of Dead Stick Dawn, to be our guest. It's our mystery novel, and we highly recommend it to our listeners. You'll not be able to put it down for the fast-packed action suspense, and to keep you even more entertained, Captain Samantha Starr of XX Airlines on vacation in Scotland becomes involved in solving this chilling mystery. This is the music we like to play whenever we have an author on our show that they can identify. Tonight, it's open line. Call in and talk with Sharon about anything you have on your mind, especially if it's about writing or aviation. We're coming to you live from our cyber satellite radio station serving over 40 countries around the world. Remember, you can call in to 213-816-1611 if you'd like to be on the air with our host. Once you hear the host, just press number 1. On your telephone dial pad. This will open your phone for live conversation. Don't forget we have a toll-free number, 877-572-1861. Let me repeat both of those numbers, 213-816-1611 or toll-free 877-572-1861. Neil?
Thanks, Jim, and thanks, Sharon, for being with us tonight. Don't you just love the sound of a typewriter? To me, the keyboard just doesn't sound quite like the sounds in that song. I always enjoyed listening to that, and I always thought of you guys that write books, just sitting there hammering away at a Remington or whatever the old typewriters used to be in those days, and those little arms just flying to make that print. And the bell at the end of the carriage, you snap that carriage back. I can see it now because I used to type on a typewriter like that. But now it's all silent. No whiteout. There's no fun anymore without whiteout to make your corrections. And then the old IBM came out, and by golly, the old IBM correct precision typewriter, whatever they call it, had its own correction. And it would go back and make the corrections. But a great song from days gone by. And Sharon, it's really great for you having you with us tonight, coming on the show for this interview. And I think our host and listeners will have a few questions they would like to ask you concerning writing and the fact that you were one of the first female pilots with U.S. Air. We'll learn a little bit more about that as we go along. Steve, would you like to introduce our guest for tonight's show?
Yes, thanks, Neil. It would be my pleasure. S.L. Meinheer, the name she uses for all of her novels, worked as a water sports model before traveling the world as a flight attendant with Pan American World Airways. After earning her commercial pilot license, Sharon left Pan Am and worked as a flight instructor, charter pilot, and commuter airline pilot until she acquired qualifications for employment with a major airline. She was hired by U.S. Airways in 1980 as the first woman pilot, bypassing the flight engineer position. She flew Boeing 727s, 737s, DC-9s, and the Bach 111 jetliners, and was promoted to captain in her seventh year. Sharon also enjoyed flying antique airplanes, experimental airplanes, and third world fighter airplanes. Throughout her airline career, she enjoyed scuba diving, powered paragliding, snow skiing, surfing, horseback riding, aerobatic flying, sailing, driving motorcycles, and that's motorcycles, and fast cars. A rare eye disease sidelined her from flying and the high adrenaline activities. Her new passion is writing aviation thrillers. The first novel in the Samantha Starr series, Dead Stick Dawn, won the 2011 Royal Palm Literary Award for the best unpublished thriller. Dead Stick Dawn was published in August 1913 by Suspense Publishing and is available in softcover and e-books. Sharon, did I leave anything out?
Yeah, it wasn't 1913, it was 2013. I have Poseidon's Sword, which is book two in the Samantha Starr series, will be released later this year.
Very good. George?
Yeah, just a short intro into Sharon's book before we ask her a few more questions. The Belfast Agreement is about to be shattered by Operation Blue Blood. One young American stands in the way, airline captain Samantha Starr. She is catapulted into a deadly chess match with police, assassins, and British special forces, all of whom want her dead. The fate of nine noble bloodlines depends on Samantha and a boy whose hero is a wizard. Stranded in Scotland, where she is accused of kidnapping and murder, where can she run? When a U.S. Navy fighter pilot and a SEAL join the hunt, and every choice can get her killed and start a bloody war in Northern Ireland, on whom should she rely? The line between trust and betrayal is razor sharp, and it's cut with a very fine line in Dead Stick Dawn. Chuck?
Good evening, Sharon. My name is Chuck Albright. I'm here in the Village, Florida. That's about 70 miles north of Orlando. My question is, when did you first realize you wanted to be a writer?
Well, after a rare eye disease caused by stress and high adrenaline activities forced me into early retirement from flying, I felt lost. my mother is a writer, and she's the one who talked me into taking a try at writing a novel. So that's what got this all started.
John?
Well, I'm lossing through the script here.
Well, John, yeah, good evening. Nice having you with us.
Good. I just moved in.
Okay,
Sharon,
very good.
My name is John Ruths, and I'm in the Baltimore, Maryland area, and my question is, how long did it take you to write a book such as Dead Stick Dawn, and where did you get the title?
Well, an experienced author can finish a book in a year or less, but I was a first-time author, so it took me 4 years because it was a learning process. I rewrote every chapter at least 40 times, and I didn't need to do that with my next book, but the one that I'm just writing now, it's taken me about 9 months total to finish it. It's almost done.
Sharon, Steve, I think he's going to ask another question. He's got his hand up. But at any rate, did you take any writing classes?
Oh, yes. I took several classes at writers' conferences. I took online writing classes. And I also was a member of a very professional critique group that met once a week, and I was the only newbie in the group. Everyone else was, they were all seasoned professionals, and they literally tore me to shreds every week. It was quite a humbling experience because, you know, as an airline captain, you're used to being respected in your field and feel pretty good about yourself, and then you try something new, and you realize you don't know anything. And yeah. I would show up every week thinking, oh, I probably got it right this time, you know, and they would just rip it to shreds again. I mean, they were ruthless. But I realized that everything they said was true, and that if I kept listening to them and kept trying, eventually I would get better. And I did. I stuck with them for a year and a half and steadily improved thanks to their patience working with me. And that's really one of the things that helped me enormously to become a good writer and to finish that book.
Very good.
Sharon,
Steve,
I see
your hand up.
Yeah, this is Steve again, Sharon.
Okay.
And I was wondering, when you're writing a book such as Dead Stick Dawn, what is your work schedule like? And this is a two-part question. Like when you're writing, I'm beginning a book, and at the rate that I am disciplining myself to sit down at the keyboard and write, I'll be 142 before the book is finished if it's about 300 pages. And I just cannot make myself sit down and type. I just can't do it. I find other distractions that are more fun. But how did you discipline yourself to sit down and schedule yourself to write?
Well, once I got involved in the plot of the story, I had like a burning desire to finish this book. It just became a part of me. And, I mean, I write every day, and all the best-selling authors that I've met at conferences all say the same thing. They write absolutely every day. And, you know, I've been on creative roles where I kept going for 20 hours nonstop because I didn't want to lose the creative flow that was just bursting through me. And, you know, obviously you can't do that every day or you'd be burned out, but it did speed up finishing the book when I would have those big, long bursts. But the only time I stopped writing was I took a break for about 6 months when my brother was killed in a plane crash in the Bahamas back in December of 2009. It took me about 6 months before I could get back to writing again. But it's just something that you have to have a burning desire to do it. And if you don't, you have to make yourself start so that once you get into it, then you will have the desire and you will enjoy it and want to keep going with it. You know, maybe you picked the wrong subject and you need something that you get fired up about to write about. I don't know.
Let me ask an additional question that Steve just brought up. When you are writing like that and you're so wrapped up into the thing, doesn't that get into your sleep pattern, and all of a sudden at 3 o'clock in the morning an idea comes to you that you ought to do this in the next paragraph?
Well, a lot of times I stayed up all night writing. There was something about I'm a, what you would call a night writer. I get a lot of good ideas late at night, but lately I've switched my time clock around, and I try to do all my writing in the day out at the beach, because the ocean really stimulates me too. But if I get an idea in the middle of the night, I've learned the hard way that if I don't keep a pad right next to my bed and write down what that idea was right then and there, I will not remember it when I wake up in the morning.
Wow. Okay.
Well, Neil, you've stolen my question, because that was what I had. And, you know, when I was writing my book, I believe I told you that I would get up in the middle of the night with an idea and have to jot it down so I wouldn't forget it in the morning. And I think that Sharon already asked the question that I had, you know. But, Sharon, do you like to, if you're like me, do you like to write alone, or you know, when you have peace and quiet around you?
Actually, no, it's surprising, because I'm able to shut out the surroundings. What happens is I get my best ideas around water. It's funny. Every time I take a shower, ideas pop into my head while I'm in the shower. And then I go out to the Singer Island Hilton. They have this covered deck that faces the ocean front. And you're looking straight out at the ocean. You get the ocean air in your face. And I can like have nothing and get out there, and 5 minutes after I sit down, ideas just start flowing into my head, and I just sit there and happily type away all day. And it's like, to me, that place is like my writer's nirvana. I love that place.
Well, that's particularly interesting for me, because as I'm sitting here at my computer, I'm looking across Long Island Sound at Greenwich, Connecticut, and I feel the same way about, you know, looking out at the water, because I do it every day where I live. And that's I find that to be very, very interesting. John, did you have something else there?
I think I was pretty much answered it, but where do you generally get your information or ideas for your book?
Well, the plot for this book just came from my imagination, and a lot of the sequences in it are I drew from my past experiences.
That's interesting.
Do you write a or do you do a skeleton of this thing and you know, put like scenes for chapters and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do in chapter one, this is what I'm going to do in chapter two. How do you go about structuring a book, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Everybody has a different method. Some people outline the book first before they ever sit down to write it. I didn't do that. I just had the whole story in my head and just sat down and started writing it. And then, of course, it took on some changes as I progressed through the book and got better ideas on how to do certain things and like that. But it's comical in a way when I think about what all was in the book when I first started. I had this silly idea of putting everything I've ever liked in other books in this book, you know, not copying them, but putting the sort of things I liked. And then I realized there's a reason why there's genres for all these different kinds of books, and you can't mix them together, which is what the professional editors told me. So, you know, back to the drawing board, I cut out big portions of the book, went back and focused on what really mattered to me, was which was the primary plot and the action and everything. And it is a process, and I did try as the story gets further along, it gets more and more complicated, and more characters enter the scene. And in order to keep track of all that, you have to have like a little cast of characters book, so you remember who everybody is and what their storyline is. And then it helps to put up a storyboard where you write just a couple lines about what's in each chapter, so you don't get confused about what's where. And I've had some other authors tell me that what they do is they use pink and blue post-it notes, and the action scenes are in one color, and the transition scenes are in another color, and when you have them all up on a board, you can look at them and see if you have a good balance.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just by looking at the color, you know.
Was that something that they teach in school?
Well, I'm a member of the Mystery Writers of America, and we have meetings once a month, and they teach us something at every meeting. It's a luncheon meeting, and then they have a guest speaker that teaches a topic that's of interest to all the authors, and that was one of the things they taught us at one of the meetings that I thought was very useful.
Very good. Jim, I'm sorry to butt in on you.
That's okay, Neil. Sharon, this is Jim Hart. You know, when you mentioned water, the first thing that came to my mind was Sully Sullenberger and the river. But is this the first book you've written? And if not, how many books have you written? And which one might be your favorite?
Well, Dead Stick Dawn was the very first thing I ever wrote. Not only was it my first book, it was my first writing effort, period. And the sequel to that, it's a series of books with the same main character, and the second book, called Poseidon's Sword, is almost finished, and that's the one that so far is my favorite. It has a lot of really thrilling flying scenes in it and all kinds of interesting storylines. It goes all the way around the world, so it gives me a lot of material to work with, and really enjoying that one a lot.
Chuck. Sharon, this is Chuck. What do you think makes a good story?
Well, you know, everybody has their own taste, but for me, I like fast-paced action coupled with plausibility, believability, and a little bit of steamy romance thrown in just to get the blood going.
Speaking of that, Chuck just asked, do you ever think of marketing? What story do I want to tell that'll bring me the biggest market? Does that ever cross your mind?
No, because professionals will tell you that you have to write the story that's inside you, not the one everybody thinks is going to sell. And you know, you have to write what you enjoy writing, and you know, thrillers are usually pretty good sellers, but honestly, the largest market for books in the world is romance novels, and I don't care to write romance novels, but they do have the largest market. I'd rather have a fast-paced action thriller and just throw in a little romance to spice it up, you know?
Yeah. Always thinks that helps. Steve?
Yes, Sharon. This is Steve again. I've got maybe some three-part questions here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beginning a writing effort, and so far I have picked a title, and I consulted with George about the title, and he says you can just because somebody has used a title, won't be same title before, you can use it again. Did you search the title for your book?
I did, and no one's ever used it, but it's true that titles cannot be copyrighted. So several people can use the same title, and I've known a few people who have tried to piggyback on the success of someone else by using the same title as a bestseller, but I don't recommend that because it's sort of makes readers angry when they realize it's not the book they thought it was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, George sent me a huge bill for his legal advice, and I think it's well worth it. But another thing, I have been cautioned by several people who have written books about your agreement with your publisher. Did you have some professional advice about an agreement with your publisher?
Yeah, I'm a member of several writers' organizations that give us advice about that all the time, and a list of attorneys you can consult if you have any question about the contract. The International Thriller Writers is excellent for that, as so is the Mystery Writers of America. And the thing is there are as many different publishing contracts as there are different publishers, And the same publisher can have many different contracts depending on which author they're contracting with. So, for example, a best friend of mine who got a publishing contract the same time I did with a different publisher than I did, her contract gave the publisher the rights not only to the books but to all the characters in the books, so that, you know, she could never write another book with any of those characters without their permission and without, you know, a contract with them. And my publisher, Suspense Publishing, they only publish thrillers, suspenseful mysteries, and horror. So they're very specific in the types of books they want. And they were very easy to work with. I thought their contract was very fair. And what I really liked about their contract was there was a clause in there that I've never seen in any of the other ones, where if I'm not happy with them and I'm not happy with the job they're doing in terms of marketing the book and selling the book, I can give them written notice and I can get my rights back.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen that with any of the other publishers. They usually, you know, it's all slanted in their favor and they want everything and, you know, the author gets very little. You know, I didn't get a big advance with them or anything like that, but I was thrilled to get a contract with them because it's so hard to get one nowadays. You know, there's so much competition.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a very good company, and I knew two other authors who were already published with them who loved them and were very happy with them. And I also had the added issue of having to avoid stress because of my eyes, so I didn't want to go with a publisher that was going to put me under a lot of stress all the time. And they're very easygoing, so that was another reason why I felt very fortunate to be with them.
Well, I have a contact in Greece who has written an article and who has illustrated it very well, and he is in the process of writing all major accidents up in his a book and sending it to me, and I've seen some of his efforts, and it's highly acclaimed by some of the people I know in the publishing business. Now, he is an author, and he is expecting me to find a publisher here and make some writing corrections on his efforts, and I don't know how to structure a deal with him. And he's asking me now to go ahead and structure a deal. I don't know whether to make it a 50-50 deal or what would be fair. So any ideas that you would have on that would be greatly appreciated.
Is he asking you to be his agent, or is he asking you to co-author the book and edit it for him?
Well, he's asking me to do both, as a matter of fact, his agent and co-author his book.
Edit, yeah.
Well, if you're going to co-author the book, you should get 50% as a co-author. Let me preface this by the fact that I'm not a lawyer and I don't know all the legal in and outs, but it just seems fair to me that if you're going to be a co-author, you should get half. And if you're going to be agenting it, you know, you might need to look into getting a little something for that too. But I do know that big money makers are nonfiction books. They tend to make a lot of money, and it's much easier to get a publishing contract for a nonfiction book. So, you might actually turn out to do quite well with that.
Yeah,
I would definitely contact a publishing lawyer and find out exactly how it should be worded so that everybody benefits and nobody gets, the short end of the stick on that.
Right. Well, thank you for your advice and information. I appreciate it. George?
Yeah, Sharon, I'm curious to know, why did you choose Scotland for the location of your book? I mean, is that your ethnic background at all?
No, it isn't. I've been to Scotland, and I've read several books that took place in Scotland that just really sort of fired my imagination about that particular place, and it's just, I don't know, it's just where I wanted to have the book. It's like I could easily visualize it in my head there.
Very interesting.
Did, Did you get much feedback from readers? And if so, what did they usually have to say?
Well, they really liked the realism, especially my pilot friends. They liked the fact that I wrote scenes that you could actually do, not the really over-the-top stuff that couldn't possibly be done in real life. And they liked the characters, and they liked the fact that it was edge-of-your-seat excitement all the way through. In fact, my biggest fan is my mailman. He just loved my book, and every time I see him, he's asking me, when is the next one going to be done? I want to read the next one. So that, I love that, because he really inspires me to keep going, you know, because he liked it so much.
That's right. All it takes sometimes is one person to really like what you've written. Jim?
Yeah.
Well, yes, before Jim, Sharon.
Jim, just before
this is
that,
Jim again.
Let's
now go to your book, Death's Thick Dawn, and ask some questions about the book. But, of course, we don't want to reveal the exciting ending to your novel. Tell us about your book. How did you come up with that, the story, the angle, the idea?
Sharon, before you answer that question, let me make a little statement here about our listeners. We've got a panel full of people that are showing up on my screen right now, and we want them to ask any questions along with your host that are asking Sharon questions now. And just a reminder, if you would like to ask Sharon a question or ask any of the host a question, press number one on your telephone dial keypad, and your microphone is open, and you can just join right in with us and ask questions as you think of them. And so we'd like to have your participation as well, because our board is all lit up here with a lot of listeners, as the famous radio show host says. Now, if you could remember, would you like Jim to repeat his question?
No, I know what it is. It was about the book and how did I come up with the story. You know, based on the classes I took, I understood that in order for it to be a true thriller, not only does it have to be very exciting, but it has to have something of international significance in the plot, not just a little local plot. And so I started with the premise of what would happen if one child of noble birth was kidnapped, and then I thought, no, expand it to multiple families, multiple children of noble birth, and then have a really good reason other than money, which is the end goal of eliminating the bloodlines forever and framing the IRA for the crimes to start a war in Northern Ireland. And when you read the book, you'll understand why the criminals wanted to frame the IRA and wanted to start the war. There's a lot of revenge motivation in this book. And on the side of the heroine, there's a desire for redemption. So the two things sort of fuel each other.
George.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Sharon's already answered the next question that I had. So I would pass the baton to Chuck.
Okay. You know, how did you get the name of the characters in your novel, and are they important?
Well, I did a lot of research for the book, and I wanted to make sure that the names were authentic names for Scottish families and English families. The Russian names are authentic. Everything in there is very authentic. And for the main character, Samantha Starr, I wanted her to have the sort of first name that could be shortened to a name that sounds like a man's name. And the reason
Sharon,
for that
Jim
is...
Hart again?
Yeah.
Yes?
What about the title of the novel, Death's Thick Dawn? How did you come up with the title?
The title is from a key scene in the novel, and it was actually my cousin Bob who gave me the idea for the title. He read my manuscript, and he's the one who suggested that title, which I just jumped at. I thought it sounded great. And at first we were going to maybe plan to have all my books in the series use aviation-themed titles, but then I changed my mind for book two because Poseidon Sword is just the perfect title for what the plot is about in the second book, even though it has more exciting flying scenes in it than the first book did. But the title just fits better for the second book, so I decided not to try to, you know, go with one theme throughout all the books in the series as far as the titles go.
Thank you, Sharon. Mm-hmm. John?
Sharon, I think you touched on this earlier, but what's a typical working day like for you? Like things like when and where do you write? Do you set a daily writing goal? Or how long did it take to write this mystery novel?
Well, I do write every day, and sometimes I write at home if I need to look up a lot of stuff, and otherwise I write out on that oceanfront deck at the Hilton. And I also have to spend a few hours every day on the Internet with all the marketing stuff, which I absolutely hate, but it's something you have to do, and answer all the emails and all that other stuff. But my primary thing that I love to do is the writing.
Right.
I've got to ask a question now. It just popped up. Sharon, what's the most rewarding thing about writing a book like Dead Stick Dawn to you? Making money or the satisfaction that people express to you, their enjoyment of the book, or just what's your reward? What's your biggest reward of that?
Well, for me, it's the satisfaction of knowing that people actually enjoyed the book. I get so invested in the characters and the story that they're like family to me. And it really makes me happy when other people enjoy it. And I haven't gotten to experience what it might feel like to make money yet, but it might be nice to have that happen someday, too.
Well, we'll see if we can help along here, sell a few books for you. And we'll tell you about that after we finish your interview here. I think, George, you have another question?
Yeah, Sharon, what part of the writing is the most difficult for you? I mean, do you get writer's block? Do you have days where you just kind of get up and say, this isn't going to work today? Or, you know, is there something like that that it ever hits you?
For the first book, I never had any writer's block at all. I found the action scenes came very easily, but the dialogue was a lot harder for me because I really wanted it to sound natural. And being a woman, I had to keep catching myself because the male dialogue, I had to be careful to be sure that it wouldn't be too wordy because men don't talk that way. And I had to keep reminding myself of that because, you know, you know what you want people to say in your head, and then you realize you can't have them saying it the way a woman would say it because they're not women, they're men. And so you have to really keep that in mind.
Sharon, this is Jim Hart again. How do you research your novels? Do you have people you know in the various areas presented in your book to consult with?
Oh, yeah. I've got people in the military pilots. I consulted with a military helicopter pilot on a lot of the helicopter scenes in Dead Stick Dawn. I've got a guy in the Special Forces. I have weapons experts, aviation experts for different areas that I'm not, you know, an expert on, martial arts people, doctors, so I made sure I got the stuff about the wounds accurate, equestrian experts, interior designers, foreign language people to get the foreign words right, because you can't just trust what you get on Google. You got to make sure the context is right. And you know, one thing I really lucked out with, and I wish I'd known it sooner, because, you know, you meet people and it doesn't occur to you to ask them, what did you used to do, you know? And I'm riding out at the Hilton all the time, and I got to know a lot of the managers out there and the wait staff, and I discovered that one of the managers is an ex-Army Ranger, and he was able to tell me all sorts of cool stuff about all the neat equipment that they have, and he's got friends that are still in. And he told me stuff the Navy SEALs wouldn't tell me because they're more secretive, apparently. But, you know, I told him I would never put anything in there that would put anybody at risk or give away any secrets, but I just had to make sure they were all using the right sort of equipment in the scene.
Sharon, I would imagine that Tom Clancy used a cast of thousands to put his books together.
Yeah, he probably could.
Yeah, consultants. Because I don't see how in the world one person like Tom Clancy could come up with the novels with all the technical details and background that he presented in his books. Especially most of his books were nearly 1,000 pages long. He just didn't know when to stop.
Well, you might find this amusing. I have a friend who's an American Airlines pilot, and he and I both had the same kind of Piper Cub special.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene in Dead Stick Dawn that involves that kind of airplane, and it involves doing things with it that you're not supposed to do with that airplane, like, you know, fly it at night, which it's day VFR only, and there's a scene, you know, where the engine is killed and the prop is stopped, and the airplane is dived at a steep angle and then pulled up at a steep angle, and anyway, you know, I asked him, you ever flown your Cub at night? Oh, yeah, because, you know, he's done everything, you know. It doesn't matter to him whether you're supposed to do it or not. If he thinks it's interesting, he tries it, right? So everything that's in that book, he's already done with his airplane, so I know for sure it can be done, which was very useful to me. And then in my second book, he used the American Airlines Flight Simulator to help me with some airline scenes where I wanted to see if certain things could be done in an airliner, and he checked it out in there for me and verified that, yep, you can do that. So he's been a huge help that way.
Yeah, very good. Well, we like to talk more about the book, and but you've shared a lot of information with us tonight. And how about sharing some advice with our listeners? Like myself, as a matter of fact, I've got a great idea I want to present later on to you and George. We have a co-partnership in this thing. But can you give some advice to our listeners who might want to write their own thrilling novel? Chuck, I think you've got a question in this department.
It's similar or close. What advice would you give aspiring writers? You know, I think every one of us on the program want to be a writer. But what would you? What kind of advice would you give?
Well, there aren't any shortcuts to good writing. You should take classes, join a good critique group, do the research, expect several rewrites, and then hire a professional editor when the manuscript's finished. Because even the best-selling authors that have been bestsellers for 20 years, they still use professional editors on each and every book.
Mm-hmm. One personal question was, how do you protect your rights for the book as it's going along, and you talk to these publishers or you talk to professional writers? How do you protect your book from being stolen?
Well, you know, when I was a brand new author, I was very worried about that, and now I realize that the chances of that happening are almost zero. Yeah, the book is automatically copyrighted from the moment you start writing it, mm-hmm. and unless somebody has your actual manuscript in hand and they just try to slap their name on it, which I can't imagine too many people would do that because of the lawsuit, you really don't have to worry about that. Publishers certainly don't steal manuscripts. They've got so many people to deal with as it is. They wouldn't even have time for that, nor would they care to. And really, I think the biggest problem that I've seen is after your book is published and after it's on sites like Amazon, you get some people in the Philippines that if it's a very successful book, they steal it, slap a different name on it, and sell it. They've done that with many, many books and gotten away with it, and Amazon has been criticized for not taking them off the site, you know. But it's very difficult to fight against international theft like that.
I've got a question before George asks a question. Does anyone know who that famous author that was an Eastern Airlines flight attendant that wrote one of the most famous books of all time?
Mm-hmm. No.
I don't.
Do you remember To Kill a Mockingbird?
Oh, wow.
She was an Eastern Airlines flight attendant? I didn't know that.
She was an Eastern Airlines flight attendant, absolutely.
Wow.
Yes, she was. And right now her name escapes me, but I want to say Hopper Hooper or something like that. But she was an Eastern Airlines flight attendant back in the late 40s, early 50s. But she didn't stay a flight attendant very long, or a stewardess in those days, as they were called. But she did write To Kill a Mockingbird.
Well, that turned out to be a movie, too, didn't it?
Yes,
yeah, sure
Gregory
did.
Peck starred in it.
Gregory Peck, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But look it up, and you'll find that one of her early careers was as a
Harper Lee, I think her name was.
Harper Lee, that's it, Harper Lee.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, a little trivia there. George, you got another question?
Yeah, I do. What suggestions, if any, do you have for our listeners if they would like to become a writer, other than to have a lot of money in the bank before you start?
Well, it's a tough industry, and it's hard to get your foot in the door. And, you know, if you are lucky enough to get a publishing contract, that still doesn't mean you're going to be making any money. So you better do it because you love it, not because you think you're going to get rich at it, because very few people do. And it's for me, it's a passion. I'd be writing whether anybody was willing to publish it or not, because I just love to do it. And I really think that's kind of the attitude you have to go in with.
Right, Chuck?
What does your family think of your writing? I mean, you devote a lot of time to it, so how do you, get to communicate with your family while you're doing all this writing?
Well, my mother's a writer, and I talk to her every day, and we, you know, throw ideas back and forth about what we're each writing. And, yeah, I just met with her earlier today. She read through my whole manuscript and made notes for me. Because it's good to get other people's take on what you've just written to see if it's hitting them the same way you intended it to. And I have a couple cousins who are professionals in their own right. They're not writers, but they're professionals in other fields, and they're both avid readers. And they've been enormous help to me with my manuscript. One of them's a man. He's a retired CEO of a big corporation, and he gives me the male point of view on the book. And my other cousin is an interior designer and expert equestrian, and she gives me lots of good ideas also. And so I really have benefited greatly from their help with my books.
Sharon, Jim Hart again. What do you like to do when you're not writing?
Well, you know, all the activities I used to like, I'm not allowed to do anymore because of my eyes. So now I read thrillers, I watch action movies, and I like to take cruises.
Oh, great.
Hi, Sharon. It's
John
again. What's the best thing about being an author to you?
Well, it's kind of fun. You get to play God. You get to create places and characters and have whatever you want to happen in the story. It can end any way you like. You know, whatever you want to happen, you make sure the bad guys get what they really deserve. It's fun.
Never thought of it that way.
If you were writing a book about your life, what would the title be?
The title would be Bombshell, because the men in my new hire class at US Air called me the Blonde Bombshell, and then they shortened it to Bombshell. And they always called me that throughout my career, so I just got used to that name.
So you were known as Captain Bombshell?
Oh, they would just call me Bombshell. They didn't say Captain.
Hey, Bombshell.
I think I heard that in Ops a few times.
Sharon, this is Steve. My daughter was a pilot with Eastern.
Ooh.
And she was an Air Force pilot also. But she was frequently referred to as another empty kitchen. Has anybody ever called you that?
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God, I heard that so many times.
Oh,
I lost track. When I first started with US Air, you know, they didn't have all those anti-discrimination rules. And, you know, I'd hear it over the radio frequency, another empty kitchen. You know, I'd
yeah.
hear so many different comments like that, you know, and I didn't care. I just let it roll off. You know, you can't let stuff like that bother you. It's just silly stuff.
Right. It's interesting about John asked you a question about if you're writing a book about your life, what would its title be? And I am writing a book about that's titled My Guardian Angels, and it's talking about all of the times in my life that I should have died and didn't.
Wow.
And that is an easy book for me to write because I don't have to think about creating characters. I just have to discipline myself to sit down and write about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited about that opportunity because it's easy for me to write about. I don't have to think about the next story or the next character. It's all about me.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a bestseller to me. You ought to do it.
Thank you.
Chuck.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was so wrapped up in Steve's story there. Have you ever read or seen yourself as a character in a book or a movie? As a matter of fact, this book sounds like it could be easily made into a movie. Would you consider doing this?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I watch action movies, I like to imagine myself in the movie. It's kind of a fun fantasy. But as far as my book goes, a lot of people have said they thought it would make a good movie, and I would love to see it as a movie, but I've got no idea how to make that happen. I'm basically a nobody. I'm an unknown debut author, and I don't know how in the world I would ever get the attention of the sort of people who would want to make it into a movie.
Tell them you know how to fly a plane.
Sharon, Jim Hart again. How do you feel about being interviewed and... did you know Sully Sullenberger?
I did not know Sully. I wish I had. He seemed like quite a prince of a guy. I never met him. As far as being interviewed goes, I am very grateful and excited to have had this opportunity, but I have to tell you, interviews do make me a little nervous because I don't really have much experience with public speaking. This is all new to me. But you guys have made it very easy, and I really appreciate that. I just feel like we're having a conversation, so it's nice.
Well, this
You're
is
doing
a
great
scrimmage.
Job.
Yeah, this is a light scrimmage when you get on Jay Leno. Well, let's see, Jay Leno's gone now. Letterman's gone now. Let's see, who's left? Kimmel and what's the other guy's name? But
well,
I'm
Jimmy
sure
Fallon now, but I always loved Jay Leno. He was my favorite.
Yeah, I had him on a flight one time. Very
Did
interesting
you?
Man. Yeah. And... well, it's really great the questions that were asked and you answered. It was very interesting. As a matter of fact, I can't wait to review our archived version of this on our website, www.eALradioshow.com. But let me tell you that we will put this on our website, the information about your book, Sharon, and we will put a picture, if you don't mind. You're a very attractive lady, and I'd like to add your picture along with the cover of your book on our website. And also, would you tell us how our listeners, we do have listeners in over 40 countries around the world listen to our show, either live. Most of them listen to the archive versions because of time differences and so forth. But can you tell us how a person listening to this show would be able to order your book and about what does it sell for?
Well, they can go on the Amazon website and the electronic book, which would be in Kindle, is only $2.99. The soft cover book, they keep changing the price, but it's approximately $12 last time I looked. The actual sticker price is supposed to be $13.99, but they've been selling it for less than that, and they keep changing it ever so slightly. BarnesandNoble.com also has the book. They have the soft cover version, and they also have the Nook version for $2.99. And you can also get the electronic book for any other kind of e-reader that you have. If you go to a regular bookstore, chances are it won't be on the bookshelf because there's so much limited space these days, but you can ask them to order the book for you. So
okay.
There's a lot of different ways you can go.
Do you have a website, a personal website?
Yes, it's www.slmenir.com. And on that website, there are buttons you can click on to take you to the sites that sell the books. So that's another easy way to do it.
Well, we'll link that to our website so people going on to our website wanting to order it can just click that, and it'll have information on how to order and so forth. So hopefully you'll get a few orders from our listeners.
Well, thank
George,
you, Dad. It's so nice of you. I really appreciate this.
Well, we appreciate you being with us tonight. You and George, and we've had a couple of other authors that have been with us. As a matter of fact, Patrick Smith was one of our interviewees. I forgot how Patrick, I don't know whether he emailed me and wanted to tell about his book, which is titled Cockpit Confidential and Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel, Questions, Answers, and Reflections, Patrick Smith. And Patrick was on with us. Yeah, Patrick was on with us. And I noticed that during this Malaysian MH370, all the stations that had their own expert people that were on, and I don't know whether it was, I think it was Fox News or it could have been CNN. I was just surfing the channels and I saw this one show, and they were asking these experts. Most of them were pilots and or NTSB and FAA people. But when I heard the name Patrick Smith, it automatically got my attention. And sure enough, there was Patrick Smith that was an expert. And I forgot who the commentator was or the person that had the show. But they asked him some questions, and I thought his answers were very good. Some of the answers that I heard, some of these so-called experts were kind of way out, far left field, you know, way out there. But we were all exposed to that as far as news for many, many days now. And now you have to kind of search for information going on in the South Indian Ocean. But it was great having you with us. George, you wrote a book also, Flying Too Close to the Sun, and I thoroughly enjoyed that book. It was a great book, and as a matter of fact, I think we all commented that this should be a novel. I mean, a movie. And have you pursued that, or have you still had any interest in doing the movie?
Yes, I do. I had actually two people who were pretty high up in the industry take a look at it, and but so far I haven't had any I have not had any takers on it, and to tell you the truth, Neil, I have another book coming out at the end of September.
Good.
And in fact, I just got my contract in advance for that one, so most of my efforts have been devoted to that right now, you know.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I just admire people like I've always thought that a person that could write a novel that would hold someone's attention all the way through, whether it's 160 pages to a Clancy novel of 1,000 pages, just really got my respect. And it's just like a beautiful picture that an artist would do. Those are two things that I can't do, is write and paint. Now, my wife is an artist, and I always admired her because she does realism, and it's in oil. But all of the paintings in our home are the ones that she did. And I constantly get she gets the compliments, but I take them to the picture so that she can get the compliments of her work, and we have them here in our office. But it's great having you with us tonight, Sharon. Thank you so much, and I hope you'll come back with us. And,
well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, got a couple of little quotes here, and then I'll be through because we're just about out of time. It's been said that an author who expects results from a first novel is in a position similar to that of a man who drops a rose petal down into the Grand Canyon of Arizona and listens for an echo. So,
I'd have to agree with that.
I would second that.
It's also been said that failure for a writer is very difficult to bear, but very few can manage the shock of early success. And that I hope that Dead Stick Dawn is going to be a very successful novel for you Sharon, and I can't when you do get a published date and it's out, please let us know. And by all means, stay on our website, and if you would like to be a member, then just fill in the information, and we'll swear you in. So it's great having you with us. Any announcements that any of our hosts have? Because we're about to sign off now, because I think I hear our sign-off music, and I think you might enjoy this, listening to a little bit of the Polka King, Lawrence Welk.
There we are.
Jim, take it from here.
All right. Thanks, Neil. Glad we could get together tonight, and a special thanks to Captain Sharon Menier for an interesting conversation. To our hundreds of listeners around the world, we hope we can do it again next Monday at the same time, the same place on your internet dial. Our sign-off bumper music tells me we're about out of time for this week's show. As you know, all of our radio shows go by episode numbers, and we're about to put number 161 broadcast into the radio archives, where you may listen again to this episode or any of the other 160 episodes during the past 3-plus years we have been broadcasting. Tell your friends about the show. More importantly, get involved with the rest of our hosts by participating in these broadcasts. We'd love to have you. You're welcome to participate live and on the air each Monday. We are proud of the fact this show is the only airline company radio show of its kind. It's part of the way we're keeping the memory of Eastern Airlines alive. We are the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. Well, that's it for tonight, folks, and from all of your hosts, we say good night, Eastern family and friends. Good night.
Good night, Eastern family.
Good night.
Eastern.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night,
thank
everyone.
You.